This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Siobhan Scott is with us right now. We are talking about The Perfect Neighbor, the doc that's on Netflix right now that talks about the Susan Lorenz case, where she ended up shooting her neighbor because she didn't like the sound of children playing outside and viewed her as a clear and present danger. It is an absolutely crazy story. Race is something that gets brought up very, very commonly in this case, in this story specifically. But I want to walk that back for a second and just, I guess, ask the question, does race play a huge role in this, or would this have been the same story had these kids been all white, had these kids been, you know, anything really? Is it just the fact that there was another entity, another human being or multiple human beings around her that irritated her? Was it about race in this, or was it just more about, you are making me uncomfortable and I just want peace and quiet no matter what?
It's hard mm-hmm. to say without talking to her about her beliefs. Sure. If I had to make a guess, I would say that, yeah, she was probably pretty deeply racist because of mm-hmm. the things that came out of her mouth, and she mm-hmm. would use racial slurs at the kids. True. So people who have these tendencies to look for, you know, I always talk about the us and them, about, you know, us that we like or people like us, and them are the people who are different from us that we don't mm-hmm. like. Very often it's a racial divide. And yeah. it can also go with religion or other things yeah. too. But when they perceive people as different from them, that's when you get this kind of thinking going.
And that's what I wonder about this case is, you know, obviously she went to low-hanging fruit and grabbed her very immature, childlike way of thinking of, I'm going to call names. And she grabbed a bunch of, you know, racist type ways of describing these kids. I just wonder, had they been anything else, would she have just grabbed some other names yeah. and thrown them out there too? Just because when the narcissist, this type of person, gets pushed into the corner, it's like it's an animal that's being threatened, and they're just going to react at any way, thing, low hanging fruit that they possibly can to try and attack, you know, social acceptance be damned. That's what I wonder about this. If it was it race-based or not, or was it just that was the easiest thing for her to throw out of her mouth that in her brain was going to be some sort of an insult at somebody, you know?
Right. Hard to know. And yeah. it would be also interesting if all those families decided to move, which I think if I lived near someone like that and I couldn't get them to move, I'd move, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. But if yeah. everyone had moved and the kids were all gone, what would she have found to be yes. angry about then? Because my guess is there would yeah. have been something else. She didn't like the way people left their trash cans out or something. You know, there'd be something to complain about.
And I mean, in the comments section, please you know, throw your comments out there. I'm going to go to those in just a few seconds. But I want to ask this before we go to some of those, is do people like this seek out neighborhoods, seek out situations in life where they can be offended, where they can be put into this situation where they're going to be the victim? Because I do wonder, why did you choose this neighborhood? Right. Why did you, like, this was an act of choice. I mean, I grant you, you own a neighborhood, you may not necessarily know everything about it or who all your neighbors are. I don't know most of my neighbors, but you do kind of get an idea of the community you're moving into, at least if you're going to be a little bit responsible with your choices. But I do wonder if sometimes people like this purposely set themselves up, I don't want to say for failure, because, I mean, the rest of us will look at this going, well, why did you choose this? But to them, is that failure? If you get to be the center of attention and get to be the one that's spewing all this out there, to them, that's attention. That's feed. That's something that keeps their engine going when they have nothing else in life going on.
Right, right. So do they put themselves in situations where they can have a battle? They have an enemy. They have something to focus on. I think very likely they do, even mm-hmm. though they may not consciously admit it to themselves that that's what they're doing. But a person like this will find an enemy no matter where they are.
Yeah, and do they go to the sea of where there's going to be a lot of enemies? I mean, people like this, do they? Would you consider her a narcissist? Let me ask you that.
I wouldn't. I don't have enough data to say that. She had some narcissistic tendencies, you know, probably. But to me, she looks a lot more paranoid than she does narcissistic. So, I mean, you always have to, because we're all in truth, we're all a blend of a lot of these different things.
Sure.
And we've all got little bits of things. People can be a touch paranoid or a touch narcissistic, and that doesn't mean they have a personality disorder. It's only when it's extreme and impairs their life or causes negative consequences that you can look at it and go, okay, let's see if it meets the criteria for a full-blown disorder, and it does. So rather than seeing her as the narcissism is predominant in her life, I would say it's more this paranoid, they're out to get me. That's the predominant theme, which puts it kind of in a different category.
It's like paranoid with a purpose. Like I'm paranoid and I want to, and like, I want to be paranoid. Like if I'm not she would be uncomfortable. I'm guessing, in my opinion, if she wasn't paranoid, because that's just, that's normal. That's baseline. And if the paranoia is not there, well, what the hell's going on?
Because
that's her modality.
Yeah, there has to be an enemy. There always has to be an enemy. And if there isn't, it isn't one, they'll create one. They'll come up with something. And and you know, this is not a real common personality type. Fortunately, 1-2% of the population has this.
That's it.
And again, that doesn't mean there aren't people who have a little bit of a paranoid thinking style, but they're not full blown into this kind of situation that we're talking about. But when they are, this is a dangerous person, and a person with a paranoid personality disorder should not have a firearm. They are dangerous.
I mean, should there be more training? I mean, with officers, I mean, they can't be the therapists, but ways of recognizing this sort of paranoid type behavior, cognitive distortions, should there be more training, more awareness just in general of being able to recognize people with cognitive distortions and call it for what it is? It's not just this light little thing over here. It's like you are seeing reality in a totally different way. And once you see somebody that's seeing reality in a totally different way, you start looking at all of their decision making, because it's all going through that same prism. And chances are it's very off in everything because of the way that prism is working.
Right. I think more training for law enforcement and in psychological topics and understanding these things is a really helpful thing. And that probably varies from department to department. And so I would like to think that they're getting some level of training in how to recognize it when somebody's paranoid or delusional or whatever. But I don't know. I don't know how much they get.
Recognizing is one thing, but then knowing how to act on it is another. And then also working within the rules of law and what one can and can't do is a total other. It's barrier, 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 hoop of fire, hoop of fire, hoop of fire. And a lot of things that would need to change in order to truly act and to be able
to prevent. Again, I don't want to, because I know cops who are really burdened. It's a hard job. And so I would hate to put them in the seat of having to do a real mental health eval. Mm-hmm. But we certainly should be able to afford at least one mental health therapist per police department who can consult on, here's a lady who's called 12 times about a situation in her neighborhood. Let's talk about what is going on here and come up with, an intervention plan where some kind of mediator can be sent out or something like that. Because, I think cops in the field could maybe flag something, but then you'd need somebody else to come in and do some follow-up and try to head off these kind of things.
Siobhan, is there any... I'm sorry, Tony.
No, go ahead.
Is there anything that this neighborhood could have done to maybe look and have some meetings and go, all right, the lady's nuts. Here's what we need to do. And could they have done an intervention of their own? And instead of her being isolated in her paranoia, could they have maybe brought her out for, some snacks? Here's some Triscuits. Come watch our football game. Come see us. Come see that we are just having fun. Could that have changed the outcome in any way?
That's a hard one. You know, my thought watching it was if I was the mother across the street and my kids were playing and this crazy woman who everybody knew was weird was there and was so hostile, I would simply remove my kids. I mean, I'd probably try to move out of the neighborhood, but I would right. say, don't play in that field. I know you have permission to play in that field. It's not right. But I would note the red flag that this lady is kind of scary and these things are escalating. So I would remove the kids just out of safety. And so would it have made any difference? Who knows? Who knows? But I would hate to put the burden on the families that, okay, this woman is crazy and taunting your kids and behaving erratically. And now you guys have to intervene in some way. I mean, would it have made a difference? Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, my other thing, I mean, and Bob Defense Diaries had made a comment here too of he thought the officers were relatively effective in dealing with the kids. I thought they were too.
They were great with the kids.
I guess the question is, did anyone realistically see this coming? I mean, I don't know that they did. I mean, it was at the end, yeah, the very, very, like when she pulled the trigger, you know, she was out there waving the gun allegedly at those very last moments. But leading up to that, she was a cantankerous old bitch. And that was kind of it. I mean, complaining, calling the police, but she wasn't like, you know, out there cocking the shotgun on the porch every day. I don't know. I mean, you tell me, were the signs there that this woman is going to escalate to that level? It seemed to go from, you know, 0 to 1,000 very quick. And when we're kind of averaging about 100 on a daily basis, it just like went, whoa, way out really fast. I don't know. I mean, if I were a police officer from what we saw in that, I don't know that I'm going to think this woman's going to shoot somebody. I'm going to think I'm going to keep getting more calls and bitching from her. But were there the signs? Were the signs there that she was going to do this?
Apparently not. You know, I don't know if I can't remember if in the documentary if they said anybody was aware that she had a gun. Did she say that at some point?
I don't know. But I mean, again, even if you knew she had a gun, I mean, at this day and age, I mean, I kind of assume most people probably have a weapon of some sort in their home. But even so, I don't know that I'm going to think that this woman's going to go shoot at somebody. She seemed off, but she didn't seem that type of off. I think. I mean, at least that would be my perception on it. I mean, the mother felt safe enough that I'm going to go knock on the door. I mean, why are you doing this? I don't think anybody thought that, didn't perceive her as that level of a threat. And that's what I'm wondering about. If nobody's perceiving this as that level of a threat, should they have? I don't know that anyone naturally would.
I think we all have to, unfortunately, because there have been so many incidents of particularly black kids or black young people going up and knocking on the door of an elderly white person. And just because they're lost or they're looking for directions and they get shot at the front door. And some of those cases have been in Florida. So I think, unfortunately, if I hope we're not living in a country where every single person is armed and ready to shoot through the door when their doorbell rings. But we almost have to have that caution in mind, because this is just one of those cases where I think that Susan Lorenz certainly had been thinking about it because of her internet searches and the things she was looking up about stand your ground laws. So I think you can really look at it that she had had this intent for some time and in essence, at least unconsciously, was setting this confrontation up.
Yeah. I mean, in her mind, I'm guessing it was probably justified of what do I do if I have to? If I'm in this situation, how is this going to work? I'm going to guess that's probably how her mind was talking to her. And then you're in that situation. And then she perceived this threat. I mean, I'm guessing she didn't necessarily think, you know, this is going to be a great day to go shoot my neighbor. But would you agree that she genuinely thought there was a life and death threat at that moment in time. No matter, I mean, completely cognitively distorted because there wasn't, but in her brain, did she think there was an actual threat, or was this something else that was taking over?
I think the fantasy of retribution and shooting someone, the fantasy had probably been going on in her head for a long time. And she probably in this fantasy visualized that she would come out as the hero victim in a way that look mm-hmm. what this poor woman had to do to defend herself. But she got a great deal of satisfaction. This is very twisted, out of the fantasy, out of thinking about it, which is why she set this drama up. So she really wasn't a victim here. She was the perpetrator.
Yeah. Let's go. Stacey, what are we looking at in the comments right now? What are some of the questions that are being asked?
Well, a lot of people have asked about the gun. One other thing that Bob Mata just put up from the Defense Diaries podcast. The question I have is, why didn't her attorney employ a mental defect defense? I think that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, Siobhan, you coming from a psychological aspect of this, would that be a reasonable defense for her?
I think it would be about the only thing you'd have. And again, not knowing her history, I don't know how much evidence you'd have for it. There could have been a lot of evidence that she had a history of erratic, hostile, bizarre behavior and try to make a mental health condition as a defense. But from what I know about, you know, trying to get off with an insanity plea, you have to be really psychotic. Mm-hmm. And this kind of person is not psychotic. You know, they're not believing things that can't possibly be true. The things that stories that they're telling themselves feasibly could be true. So it doesn't really meet the bar for an insanity defense most of the time.
And wow. Feels like it, though. I mean,
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there's a difference here too of choosing to believe your delusions. I mean, there is some autonomy here as well. I mean, there's a difference between where your mind, like, this is it. This is black and white. This is how it is. I truly think that there's, you know, a demon at the door. You know, literally. I mean, if you're thinking the devil is outside your door and they're coming to get you, that's clearly you're nuts. There's mm-hmm. something right. mentally wrong. And right. and there's a difference between that and then it's my neighbor. I just threw a roller skate at a kid. Mom might be mad. Like mm-hmm. that you're making a choice to dig yourself deeper into that mm-hmm. hole of delusion.
Right. Right.
And that's, I think, is that a good way of describing kind of the difference
really good
here in that way of thinking?
Really good yeah. way to describe it. Yeah, a truly delusional person has no control over the fantasy life, and they can't, in fact, they can't tell what's real and what isn't real at all. Versus personality disorder, they're looking through a filter, and they're distorting reality, but it doesn't meet the standard of being delusional.
What else we got out there?
Shana, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing it, says she was abusing the police department. She could have faced charges for that, I would think. I think that was, I had made reference to that as well. Think of all the other calls that maybe were not getting attention because they were right. dealing with her so much. I just wonder if that was something that was overlooked by the department, that maybe we need to, like, again, with the mental health aspect, maybe somebody else should have been dealing with her so they could go mm-hmm. deal with calls mm-hmm. Out on the street. So that was one comment that was in there. Also, people had brought, somebody did bring up, she told them the N-word a bunch of times. Again, mm-hmm. that racist aspect.
Yeah.
And a lot of talk about not being stable enough to have a gun. But mm-hmm. again, if she was undiagnosed, mm-hmm. she has a right to own a gun.
And even in this country, even diagnosed. I mean, exactly. there's nothing right. that says a
correct.
Person, even if she had a diagnosis of flaming paranoid personality disorder, that's not a mental illness that's going to keep her from getting a gun in the United
no.
States.
But again, that stat that you said as we first began, people with this kind of disorder, and again, we are just, you know, going off of the documentary, we don't have a diagnosis for her, that turns them into a very dangerous person when they have a gun.
It does. We have a lot yeah. of very, very dangerous people with guns.
Yes.
And if people think that we're doing any kind of mental health screening to keep the mentally ill from having guns, we're not, folks. We're not. There's a lot of mentally ill people with guns.
Go walk around a gun show for a day. Oh, God. Wouldn't it be great? I would love this. I would love if to enter the gun show, you have to go through a mental health screening.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine? No one would be there.
I went to one once in this area, Tony.
I've been to several. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm a gun owner.
I am too.
I've got three guns with me, right? No, two. I'm sorry. Two.
Two are under the table right now.
No. They're not. They are not loaded. They are in a gun safe.
Yeah.
But I felt very uncomfortable at the gun show. Yeah. And I'm a gun advocate that you need to be trained and practiced on a regular basis so that you're proficient. And I felt uncomfortable at the gun show. So there's an element. I'm just casting a blanket over it, but there's something different. I'm going to say different.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a way to get guns and bypass the system in a lot of states, too, where you don't have to. There's lack of screening. There's all that go on. And there's certainly normal, healthy way. I'm not saying everyone that goes to the gun show is bad. I've been to them myself. I am a gun owner, too. But there is a sect of the folks there that shouldn't be having weaponry. And you know it right away. I mean, and they tend to be around the paranoid book clubs.
I was gonna say the paranoid people and the people who are waiting for or advocating for race wars. Yes. So you get a very distinct kind of person.
And that's Tony, that's the feeling that I was picking up on. Was like, this look of boy, my spidey sense is up, you know?
As with everything in our country, though, it's we're not proactive, we're reactive. And then horrible shit happens. How did this happen? There's a recipe. Here's the recipe on how this happened. I don't know how to fix it. I don't think anyone really does, other than we do some more common sense things. And I'm not even talking about guns. I'm just talking about mental health in general, of when you recognize that there's something really off on someone, it feels that, you know, our system is basically, well, let's hope it goes away. Mm-hmm. let's just keep doing our job, keep following the system and hope maybe they'll get better. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll do something horrible to themselves or others, and then we can react. But that's and then you get situations like this, and the mom of four is dead because someone was afraid of their own shadow, basically. It's a screwed up story.
You continue on, Tony, one more comment from the last 24. Great coverage on the side of what causes the criminal to move the way they do isn't covered enough, in my opinion. So thank you for that. The last 24, you've had some great comments.
Yeah. And Bob, yes, I agree. You probably should buy one at this point. I do. I wish I didn't have to own one. I was not a gun owner until probably about 10 years ago. And I just felt I got one when I had a kid, and I'm like, I would be neglectful if I didn't have something in my home in case something were to happen. And it's locked up. It's safe. There's no way in hell she could get her hands on it. Any of that. And you know, being responsible, there's nothing wrong with that, but just, I don't know. I don't think it's being paranoid in society to recognize that there are monsters out there that are unhinged, and it's not a bad idea to protect yourself or have the means to, should you need it. Will I likely ever use it? Probably not. Is it probably some version of a safety blanket? Probably. But I don't know.
Weren't you teasing me for having knives all over my apartment?
That I will, and that's not safe. That's
I don't have any kids. I have cats.
The cats, you never know. Cats can become ninjas too. I mean, have you seen the sequel to Milo and Otis? You know,
I have not.
Oh my God, it's dark. They got rid of it. It's not on, you can't find it anywhere because Milo and Otis become gangbangers and they end up taken out like a whole shopping mall. It was a really dark Disney movie in 1994.
Good thing you're a couple states away, dude.
Cats can do weird shit.
My cats, if you they pick that. Up my knives, there's a lot more going on than just...
The point there is you could be easily overpowered with that. That
but
is
again. That, I'm in martial arts and I'm training.
That
to
doesn't
use
matter.
Those knives.
If someone wanted to overpower you, they could.
And, well, they could if I had a gun too.
You have a little more leeway there with a gun, I think, than with being ninja knife warrior. And again, the cats. Think of the cats. The cats, you know, they don't
we'll
have opposable thumbs,
the
but they know how to use those paws. They can, you know.
They're armed as well, so.
If someone, yeah, you know, yeah. All right, let's wrap it up there. Meow, as someone says. All right. Siobhan, as always, thank you for coming on and giving us your thoughts. Nightbird is your memoir, and The Minds of Mass Killers, it's right over here in my library pile of books, also available wherever books are sold. All right, until next time, for Siobhan, for Stacy, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.